Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Heard about Anchor. It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today. And folks, it has been a month. I'm back. And what better, I know I'm rusty, it's been a while, but what better way to kick back off YWC football talk for the start of football season? Because guess what, folks, it is less than 3 months away right now than with PatPulpit.com's own Keegan Stifel, which, by the way, recently interviewed Joe Cardona from the New England Patriots. Keegan, welcome back. How are we feeling on this June evening?
Feel great. It's beautiful here in Massachusetts. It's like 68 degrees. It's wonderful. Mini camp started back up. Pretty excited about that. As excited as you can be for somebody who can't go. I'm following along like the rest of everybody else, just grinding away on Twitter, trying to get as many clips and stuff as I can. But I'm excited to see how the team's going to start to take shape, and just excited to watch football. Training camp, it's going to be open. I'll be there. I'm real excited.
Any plans to podcast live from Gillette Stadium as you're at training camp?
So I mentioned that as a joke at the end of, I believe, our last podcast. I mentioned it as a joke. We're going to figure something out, something fun for fans, maybe a video, maybe me recording practice when I'm not supposed to be. I'll get tackled by a security guard, something like that. We'll have something fun for the fans.
Just you standing there the entire time like this, like, hey, don't mind me.
It's my pacemaker. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Sir, I have a heart condition. Can you please back away? Oh, but anyway, this episode also is going to entail two depressed hockey fans, even though he still got UMass and potential Norris Trophy winner Cale Makar. We're talking football, like I said, training camp, and training camp's so close, but with mini camps even here, like, I love how Cam had a few bad throws, and even like yesterday he had one, and then someone sent it to me like LOL Griff, and I'm like, it's June 14th and his hand's busted. I'm not gonna freak out over a couple bad throws. If I'm gonna freak out over a quarterback, I'd be a Miami Dolphins fan right now.
Yeah, Tua, 5 interceptions of practice, yikes. Listen guys, if you're sitting in the cube and someone comes and starts recording you, and you make a mistake, and then the whole world is like, oh, this guy sucks at his job. That's tough. Like, let's give everybody a break. I know from a couple of guys that I know that have been at practice saying none of the quarterbacks have really looked that great. Mac Jones looks good for a rookie, but that's not really saying much. So, let's pump the brakes. It's the first time they've thrown a football in a few months, so they're a little rusty. It takes some time to get back into the swing of things.
Yeah, exactly, because it's the middle of June. If it's the middle of August and they're having these throws, or if they're having, like, what Tua did today, a 5-interception day, which everyone's kind of jokingly saying, oh, wash or whatever, I'm like, it's June, guys, let's chill. If it's August 15th and this is going on, okay, yeah, then be worried, because you only have a few weeks till the season. We still have a few months, and I'm already seeing, like, how this person does or what happens here, even something as – it was something as little as, like, Hunter Henry and Smith, I think, both had leg injuries this week and or throughout the last week or so. And people were like, oh, yeah, it's like Hunter Henry injury prone. I'm like, It's June. I don't want to freak out, but then part of me inside is like, it's like a little screaming guy in the cage where it's just like, let me out. My football, like inner football emotions are just screaming.
Yeah, like nothing physically that happens in June matters. None of it's going to translate onto the field. Like it's all mental stuff. It's all about like the new guys really getting caught up on the program. And even guys that came in last year, all the rookies from last year, all the free agent signings from last year, I don't think any of them really know the system still. Yeah. Because last year was a shit show. So they'll figure it out. Like it's there's no need to worry. And even on the whole Tua thing, in Jimmy Garoppolo's first four training camp passes as a 49er, he threw interceptions and then led them to the Super Bowl that year. So like it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, that was coming off his – that was the year coming off the torn ACL too, and I remember everybody was freaking out about that. So it's like, guys, just got to take a chill pill. The only other thing I'll say right now is Sunday night at – this is an off-topic football story, but Sunday night I was at just at home, and the U.S. Olympic trials were on. There was nothing else on TV. And I see Mike Tirico, and I'm like, all right, cool. And then I hear Michelle Tafoya, and I'm like – I literally looked at my sister, and I'm like, that's weird. She's like, why? I'm like, I do not – just my brain's not programmed to see football people in the summer. Yeah. When it's like team reporters, I'm like, okay, whatever. Those guys, that's their job. But with her, I'm just like, I'm not supposed to see you for another 3 months. This is nice.
Yeah, it's always weird. I remember seeing – who was it? Oh, Erin Andrews. I think she did like a baseball game like a month ago. And I was like, what the hell is it? She's not supposed to be out in the summer. Like they put her away in a cage somewhere. And then she comes out during football season and then goes right back. I was shocked. I couldn't believe I was seeing her on my TV.
Exactly. It's like all those, like, for example, if I see the college guys, it's like David Pollock just popping up out of nowhere. I'm like, hey, what where have you been?
Yeah.
But anyway, going back to the whole mini camp stuff and everything, like it's also a chance for the rookies to impress. Cause I think this year, NFL wide, you're going to see a lot of these rookies, or not rookies, but second year guys. It's going to be like, oh my God, where did this guy come from? It's just like, they didn't have a chance to properly develop. They didn't have a chance to, you know what, work out properly until they got the training camp. But now with obviously COVID being a lot better in the States, and I think it's still 30 of 32 teams are going to be full capacity in the stadiums, which cannot wait for. It's just, the season's going to be back to normal. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I think by the time we get to the season, it'll be 32 out of 32. Like, I don't see it going any other way, unless things drastically change, which is tough. But, you know, like you said, with the second-year guys and guys who are still getting used to their teams, like, I think of a guy like Kyle Duggar, who came out of D2 and immediately made an impact without even knowing what position he played. Like, he in the Jets game in the season finale, he played four different positions on the first drive. And like played well at all of them. So there's no way that a rookie in week 15 after, you know, no training camp knew all four positions. So that's the kind of guy they would just throw out there and like, go tackle somebody, like go make a play. So now that he's actually going to get a chance to learn the defense with Dante Hightower calling the defense and Devin McCourty beside him, big years for these guys. I think that we're going to see a lot of big jumps in terms of production picks are going to look a lot better this year than they did last year. I'll say that.
Exactly. Like I even think someone like a Devin Asiasi is going to come out. I'm not saying he's going to be, oh my God, he's been this great tight end, like whatever. But if he comes out and just, I said this in my free agency article I wrote back in March, do your job, I'll be impressed. I said it for guys, like, I think it was the guys I didn't know much about, like Henry Townsend, Montavis Bryant or Adams. I'm trying to remember his name.
Montravis Adams.
Like guys like that. I just said, look, I don't know much about you. You come out here, do your job, I'm going to be satisfied. So, like, guys like Keen and Asiasi can do that, which with Keen, we don't know. Hopefully, it's the fullback conversion. And Asiasi, tight end three, just, you know what, block, catch a pass here or there, and be good. And then even two, like Kyle Duggar, Josh Uche, Michael Owenu, guys who were all great in their rookie seasons, now have that experience. So, last year, they're kind of prematurely thrown into the fire in some situations, except for Owenu, first team all-rookie, not a big deal. Can now solidify, because like I look at all the photos from minicamp and I see the offensive line, and I know we're without Tooney, but man, this offensive line is going to be something good.
Yeah, like even to touch on the offensive line, like the sheer amount of weight on the offensive line, like there's like I posted something on Twitter a few weeks ago, and the Patriots' potential red zone package with three tight ends and two running backs, they could possibly weigh 3,010 pounds down at the goal line. Like, that's ridiculous. That's a crazy number. Like, that sounds like I made it up. I did the math. So, like, you've just got these huge guys, and then you've got guys coming in that have played so well in this system. Like, Ted Karras is the ultimate plug-and-play guy. He can do everything and do it, like, well. And then Trent Brown, who obviously was good enough to be a Pro Bowler in his lone season in New England. David Andrews coming back. Michael Onwenu, who's, if he takes the next step, he could be one of the best guards in the league. And then steady Shaq Mason, and they say steady Teddy Karras. It's steady Shaq Mason. Shaq Mason never makes mistakes. And then Isaiah Wynn, if that guy can stay healthy, if this offensive line can stay healthy, there's not a better unit in the league, I don't think. Just off of, you know, sheer talent, and they've all worked together pretty much.
Oh, same here. Like, our offensive line has great potential. Like, even too, but say, for example, if Isaiah Wynn, knock on wood, gets injured, Ted Karras is there to go in and fill his spot. Because I know he mainly is a center, but he does, I'm just trying to remember. Yeah, he can play guard. So if anything, because Wynn's a tackle, I believe. I'm just brain fart right now.
Yeah, you throw Karras in at guard and then slide on Wynn to tackle and you're set.
Exactly. So it's kind of like one of those like repeat things where it's like go down the list where it's like, you know what? We're prepared for a worst case scenario to happen. Even this year with our running back room, obviously I know we lost Rex Burkhead to Houston, but I've been saying this for a few months now. I fully expect Harris to get the bulk of the carries, even though I know it is competition, like a competitive running back room. Like, there's no real guy, which, well, obviously the NFL is like that, but I expect Harris to get the bulk of the carries. I honestly was thinking, like, you know what, maybe Sony would be the short down guy. I think it's Ramondre Stevens now, honestly. You described him as, you said Haas, you have said LeGarrette Blount. I remember myself just screaming or tweeting in all caps, blunt force trauma when that happens, when he would just truck through guys. I'm like, that's what I expect Stevens to be. So if we can have like a great running back room, like with Harris and Stevens leading the way, and even too, you get guys in there white for the third down cat pass plays. Even Michelle can do that too.
Yep.
Thinking about what this offense can do, it's a lot better than last year already.
Yeah, like the big thing that I think they focus on in terms of like adding players is versatility and competition. That's all they're looking for. They're looking for guys who can do multiple things and push the guys who are already on the roster. And I think Stevenson is like the big, like he represents that more than anybody else they drafted this year, maybe except for quarterback, but there's no versatility there. Like Stevenson's a guy who can come in and be your workhorse, short yardage, like fourth and three, we need to pick up 3 yards. He can be that guy. He can also run routes and like tiptoe up and down the sideline, and he's got great contact balance. He's a guy who I think he's the most versatile back on the team just by showing up, because Harris and Michelle have had struggles picking up the passing concepts. James White, he's just not a great runner, like between the tackles. He can do it, but he's not phenomenal at it. Brandon Bolden's a great special teamer, but I don't really want to kind of trust him to play a big role on offense. And then J.J. Taylor, like no one knows what that guy can be. He could be great. He could also kind of not really show up and do a ton. So, but I think Stevenson right now, he can do everything. He can block, he could pass, or he could catch, he could run, do all those things. So he's a guy that early on, I don't think he'll be able to do it much, but as you get later on into the season for the playoff push, that's a guy like Rex Burkhead who can come in, change a pace, do a ton of different stuff.
Exactly, because even too, that's the other thing. Like, we need someone who's good in the pass protection who can pick up that like outside blitz that comes through. And Stevens is someone that can fit in there, because I know a lot of the times last year that was the big thing with opposing defenses. They recognized with Cam, it's like, look, if we blitz him from his outside, from his blind side, you're gonna tackle him. There was a lot. I think the Denver game specifically where stuff like that happened. So, look, all the more power to us. And even too, I see a lot of opposing people going like, oh, with our receiver room still not being the best in the league, but I'm just like, watch out for Trey Nixon. It's that Ernie special. It's just, look, for those Patriot fans who don't, or not Patriot fans, if you're a Patriots fan, you should know who he is. For not Patriots fans, he's that secret weapon you want in your draft room.
Yeah, he's like the kind of guy, just the fact that he got drafted by Ernie Adams, he'll make a Pro Bowl at some point. Like, it's just going to happen, it feels like. But with that receiver room, I think things are kind of set 1 through 4. Like, you've got Bourne, Myers, and Aguilar, who are they're on the roster. And then Oshevsky is going to make the team just off his punt return ability alone. So there are guys kind of fighting for that fifth spot. And then N'Keal Harry, if he can stay healthy and they can figure out that he's Dez Bryant, like he doesn't have all the things that Dez Bryant has, but if you use him like the Cowboys use Dez Bryant, you're going to get results. That's what they did in the preseason his rookie year, and he played well and then got hurt. So if he can stay healthy, I don't see him not making the team. And then if there's a guy to make that last spot, that has Trey Nixon written all over it. Just a speedster who can stretch the field, who can run, he can run end arounds, do that stuff that Josh McDaniels loves to do, throw him a bubble screen. Like that, I don't see, you look at that guy and that's what he does. Like you could just see it in him.
Oh, 100%. Like, you know, like it's a seventh round pick. You know what you're going to get. Like, for everyone who's seventh round pick, Bill Belichick's going to know how to use them. But I even love the whole two, because I've seen a lot lately, the whole, oh, imagine if the Patriots drafted A.J. Brown over Harry. Well, another one I heard of today was, what if the Kansas City Chiefs had drafted D.K. Metcalf over Mecole Hardman? Just for every time people want to come in and say, oh, this team had a bad draft or a bad draft pick, just remember, there's always another one out there. I'm not dissing on Hardman. I'm just saying, you put Metcalf on the Chiefs, that's not something the rest of the league will love.
Yeah, I love my boy Andy Isabella, UMass legend. But that guy got drafted before DK Metcalf. Like, that's – everybody missed on him. Everybody. Like, there isn't a single team on the planet that didn't miss on DK Metcalf twice. So, like, pump the brakes on the whole DK Metcalf thing. I am team A.J. Brown should have been drafted by the Patriots, though. Me and my boy Ryan Kieran, we were pumping those tires 3 years ago, and it didn't work out. But still, who knows what can happen with N'Keal.
Exactly. And even the other thing, too, was there was a video of him when the Patriots won the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs, and he's, like, just losing it. I'm like, I tweeted this too many times last year. I'm going to not try to tweet as many times this coming season, but it's the Brooklyn 99 gif of Captain Holt just going pain. That's like, that was me when I watched that. I tweeted out too many times last year, more or less too, because when it was a day when the Pats were having a bad game and Tampa's just out there, hey, look at us. So yeah. And then, you know what? I was going to say this too, the whole Gilmore stuff too, I also don't look too much into as well. And the Hightower rumors, the whole, at Spike King, that was a cold take, the whole he's retiring. Like, hey, look, he's not playing here for free. So we'll see what happens. But my favorite Patriot's still on the roster.
Yeah, like, I don't know much about him, like the Spike King. But, you know, people throw stuff out there, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's a tough look. But the whole, like, try to dunk on people and stuff like that, like, unless they were an asshole about it, then relax. It was a bad take, a swing and a miss. And then with the Gilmore stuff, I said it last year when everybody was like, oh, he's just on vacation. He didn't show up to the first 3 days of training camp by coincidence. And then all of a sudden he got a pay raise and then showed up. Yeah, that was a coincidence. He's holding out. It's a holdout. Every team has holdouts all the time. Like, it's not a big deal. I think they're just going to give him more money this year. They're just going to be like, hey, we've got $5 million for you. You want it? And he's going to be like, yeah, I'll take it. And then he's going to play out the rest of his contract. That's what I assume is going to happen. They might give him an extension. That's tough for like a 31-year-old corner. You know, it never seems to work out corners going into their 30s, but who knows? But like the whole reading into him missing the first days of minicamp, Tom Brady didn't go to minicamp in 17, 18, or 19. They were fine. Like it's not a big deal. Gilmore is not the kind of guy who needs to practice with his teammates and figure out the defense. Like, you throw him out there, you say, go cover that guy, and he's going to do it. It's not really all that complicated. So I think he'll be fine.
Exactly. And even too, if they lock him up for this year, it's fine. And the next year he decides, hey, I want to go somewhere else. Look, Steve Keim can sign him as a free agent for a 3-year deal worth like $30, $35 million. And because I've been hearing this a lot, it's like, hey, would you rather go Gilmore or Jackson? If we're going long-term, I'm going Jackson. I know Gilmore's the better player, but with the NFL, sometimes you got to go youth over experience.
Yeah, especially with, like, the numbers of 30-year-old corners, they just – it doesn't work. Darrell Revis, I hate the term fell off a cliff because Max Kellerman buried it into the ground, but yep. Darrell Revis fell off a cliff. Aqib Talib fell off a cliff. Ty Law, even when he hit like 32, fell off a cliff.
It happens.
Like these DBs, when they hit 32, it's tough. Some of them work out. Devin McCourty's been great. He's like 34, I think. He's been great the past few years. But some of them, it just doesn't work out. The hips, they don't work like they used to. You're not able to keep up with younger, faster guys. Like that's just the way it is. And if you've got a guy in J.C. Jackson who's just gotten better every year that you've had him on the roster, why wouldn't you invest in that? I don't see any world where you don't invest in the up-and-comer over the guy who's been here and he's done it, but there's a slide coming. There's going to be a slide. There always is. I agree with you on the J.C. Jackson front. I think he's the guy to invest in at corner.
Exactly, and especially if he has a year like he did this past year, because we can have a secondary going forward where you have Kyle Duggar, you've got J.C. Jackson. We'll see what happens with McCourty, and then even to Jalen Mills, which the signing makes a lot more sense now because of the Patrick Chung retirement, so we'll see what goes on there. And the other thing I'll say coming out of this whole minicamp stuff is, besides Mills wearing two, I love Juwan Bentley and Matthew Judon just 8 and 9. I'm like, oh, like it's perfect.
Single digits are so cool. Like I cannot stress that enough. Single digits make you, I think they make you a better football player if you wear single digits. It's just, you're faster, you're stronger, you're more
instinctive. Got more swagger.
Yeah, you got more swagger. Like Jalen Mills, I tweeted it out. I think they had media day a couple days ago. No one will find out for like 3 months that they had media day a few days ago, but he posted a picture in his uniform. I already crowned him 2021 swag champ. He's got the shooting sleeve with armbands over it, the Tyrann Mathieu style armbands from back in his LSU days. Very cool. Extremely cool. I think just off that alone, he'll be the best player on the team next year.
There's a lot to this Patriots team that I think fans are going to like the more casual fans are going to get used to, but then they're going to realize, hey, look, these guys can play. These guys are good. Is even too, the secondary is good. And then that just the linebacker defensive line with, man, we'll see. I think Christian Barmore has a good chance to start being a Lawrence guy as well. You have those two guys up the middle. And then on the outside, you're going to have Winovich, Judon, even with the linebackers, Bentley, Van Noy, Hightower, like thinking about it. Like just thinking about it, I was going to say Matthew Judon again. Uche. Just, it's like salivating, like Homer Simpson looking at a donut. Just quick Simpsons reference for all Simpsons fans out there. Like thinking about that. And even too, so Steve Belichick and Jerod Mayo at the helm of that defense. It's like, this defense isn't going to let up a lot of running plays like they did last year. Like Belichick knew what his weaknesses were and he addressed it in free agency.
Yeah, I think like with the running game defensively, Godchow, Henry Anderson, Lawrence Guy, Dietrich Wise, Christian Barmore, they just added size up front.
Yeah.
That alone, I think they're moving to more of a 4-3 style defense probably, where they're moving to a 3-4 style defense where they're going to have one guy in the middle two gap, and then they're really going to let their linebackers kind of play free and loose. They weren't able to do that last year. So when you're coming out with four linebackers who are probably the most athletic players on your team, and Judon, Uche, Kyle Van Noy, Dante Hightower, like those guys alone are going to make your defense 10 times better. And everything that you've heard of Uche so far, which, you know, take it with a grain of salt, they don't have pads on. They're kind of, it's competitive walkthroughs, really. Yeah. But everything you've heard about him since is no one can block him. He's the fastest player on the team. Like he's running by people and sacking the quarterback every drill or every period. I think, you know, just so I have a place to say it, I'll say it here and now for you. I think he's going to be the best defensive player on the team next year, in year two. I strongly believe that. Just in the role that he'll be able to play, just because he's not going to play every down, and I think they're going to mix it up with him. They're going to let him play a little bit inside, but it's going to be that Kyle Van Noy role that you saw 2 years ago in that 2019, the boogeyman defense. That's what Uche is going to be doing this year. And he's more athletic. He's faster. I don't know if he's quite as strong, but if I think he's probably right on par with Kyle Van Noy. All of those things, you're just getting a better athlete at that position. If he can be as instinctive, there's no doubt that he'll be the best defensive player on the team.
That whole rant you just went on, that makes me feel – that's an impeccable rant. You can't top a sensational. We're using all these little Cam logic words of the day because we're loving it. But you know what? I can't even forget – I can't believe I blanked on Dietrich Wise too. Like another guy, look, when you call on him, he's going to get his job done. I'm calling this right now too. Matthew Judon is going to get a sack against Tom Brady week four in that Bucs game. He's going to go, I thought he was a safety. No, Tom, we love you, but he is a defensive edge. And number also, one thing I remember too, unfortunately, from the Baltimore game 2 years ago was that I think Judon kept getting to Brady during that game. That's just one thing to point out too. Not love Tom, but I'm just saying.
Judon's one of those players, like, I don't watch a ton of Ravens football. Like, I don't keep up with them or anything like that. But he's a guy where if you watch a game, that's who you notice. On offense, defense, no matter who they're playing, like, you notice him. Like, obviously, Lamar is the big name, and Mark Andrews is a good tight end. They've got good offensive linemen, good linebackers. But, like, when you watch a game, if you're watching the players on the field, not the names on the TV, that's the guy that you notice. He's so disruptive at all times. Like, he just messes everything up that the offense is doing on the opposite side. And I think that's perfect for the Patriots defense. They're just going to tell him, go out there, mess up the whole left side of the offensive line, and let Dante Hightower go to work, pretty much, or Kyle Van Noy, whoever's going to be playing on that side. Like, give them some space. Just, for the lack of a better term, fuck shit up. Just go out there and you can
swear here, man. I love it. Swearing is acceptable on YWC Football Talk. But with the boogeyman comment, I think it was you or Pat, one of you three pulpit guys who said that they didn't like it because after them was when shit started to go south. That's you. It was you.
I thought it was so nerdy. I hated it at the time. I thought the shirt sucked. But I think I'm the only person on the planet that didn't like it. I thought it was horrible. I could come up with 15 better nicknames than the boogeyman. That was trash. But it was a great defense.
I just love the Brady victory video the day after, where it was just him. And then I'm trying to remember what his kids' names were. The one kid's name, I think it was Ben, was basically just like, happy Halloween. And he's playing I'm Your Boogeyman by Casey and the Sunshine Band. So, like, literally one. And even too, I think Kyle Van Noy, he didn't bring the boogeyman back, but he was playing another song like that in his video when he announced that he was coming back, when it was just like, Pat's Nation, I'm home. And I'm just like, you get these good feelings and stuff. And that was in March, but now we're in June. So it's just like transitioning on. One thing I want to ask you, and because we'll get into it from the perspective of the team that got him, where were you on the Pats and the Julio situation? Obviously we would have loved it, but how did you feel that we didn't get him?
I don't think it was ever a possibility, really. Just in terms of, I would have been, like, if I'm the GM, I would have been in on it, just a second round pick. But with the way that your wide receiver room is set up, there's no big number one guy. There are, like, three guys who could possibly be the number one, like Bourne, Myers, Aguilar. I think all three of those guys could kind of take over the team this year and really stick out. But when you – the best way I've had it explained to me in terms of the way Bill Belichick builds his roster is – strong middle class with very little on the top end and the bottom end. So you're not going to have the best players in the league. So, like, you had Brady for 20 years. You had the best player in the league for 20 years. But you're not going to spend high dollar on a tackle or a corner or an edge rusher just to have them, that one player, really kind of stand out. You're going to have a really solid middle class, and that's going to those are going to be the backbone guys of your team. Like, I think of, like, a Lawrence guy as the perfect example. Like, that's a middle class, just middle of the road guy who's going to do his job very well, and he's going to do it for cheap. That's how they build their team. They don't do it by going out and making splash trades and stuff like that. They've done very little of that over the years, and some of them haven't worked out. So I don't think they were ever in on him, just in terms of the way that the roster's already built. You're kind of messing with the whole structure by adding one of those guys, especially a guy who, though he's one of a top five wide receiver in the league, he's never done anything for you. So you're rewarding a guy like that by bringing him in when you've got guys like Jacoby Myers, who's worked his ass off and become your best receiver. And he's kind of getting screwed because he's not going to be able to play as much when you're bringing this guy in. It's a weird way of looking at it. And of course, who wouldn't want Julio Jones on their team? But I don't think that's the way they build their football team. So why change things when it's worked so well, you know, in the past?
No. That's completely fair. It's just something I wanted to get where your gauge was in on it. Obviously I was disappointed that we didn't get him, but the way I look at it, especially after you describe it, it's kind of like the too many cooks in the kitchen metaphor, where it's like, look, you have a room, you've got to establish. You bring Julio in, he's great, but then he doesn't get the load or the bulk of his workload, he's not going to be happy. He's going to be like, okay, why am I here? Meanwhile, he did go to somewhere like Tennessee where, you know what, they lost a couple of weapons this year with Corey Davis going to New York. Obviously, Jonnu Smith went to a better home. But all you had was A.J. Brown. Obviously, they have one of the best running backs in the NFL, but you need to give Ryan Tannehill someone else to throw to, because we see what goes on in Green Bay, which we'll get into that, because obviously it's the one of the only news tidbits of the day. But I feel like with him going to Tennessee, he'll go there and work and be respected. The only thing I'll say is they missed on is he should have been number 8 and not number 2. Because if you folks do not know, he wore 8 at Alabama. That's all I got to add to that.
I think 2 is way cooler than number 8, personally.
True.
So I would have picked 2, even though I wore 8 in the past. But that's just me. And like you said, with the whole Tennessee thing, if you got into a bidding war with Tennessee, they would have outbid you.
Oh,
like, it would have been nice. Maybe it would have been nice to one of the best, you know, teams, one of the biggest adversaries in the AFC this year, like a team that you're going to have to get through throughout the course of the season. It would have been nice to drive the price up a little bit against them, but you were never going to beat them. Like, you were never going to get Julio Jones while they were in on him. I think they would have gone – they would have gone first round pick. The Patriots never would have gone first round pick. So like the whole hypothetical thing, it was never going to happen anyways. So I don't see the point in putting a whole lot of stock into what if.
Yeah. Same. Like you, it's the one thing we do though, but you always do it as sports fans. Like what if this, what if that, you do it no matter the sport, NBA, MLB, NHL, NFL is the prime example here, but it's just what we do as sports fans. But look, like you said, Tennessee was determined to get him. Like, you had A.J. Brown making those videos. Obviously, it's offseason, so we can talk about whatever we want. And not just offseason, but it's really, like, the offseason where not a lot goes on. Do you think this – like, do you believe into the whole, like, this could push Tennessee to a Super Bowl run, or would you still have, like, Kansas City and Buffalo ahead of them?
I think that defense is so bad. Like, yeah. Like, the Titans' defense isn't good. They've had struggles mostly with injuries. Like they've got a solid defensive line. They've got good pass rushers. Their linebackers, when they aren't injured, are really good. But Rashawn Evans and Jayon Brown have been hurt pretty much.
Harold Landry, too.
Harold Landry as well, like one of the pass rushers. Like, he misses a game here and there. I don't – the secondary, they basically punted on their entire secondary last year. They got rid of everybody. Kevin Byard's still there, I believe, and that's kind of it. Like, both starting corners gone. Safety next to who was
Adoree Jackson went to the got overpaid to go to the Giants.
Adoree Jackson gone. Kenny Vaccaro they let go like I think 2 years ago. Like, that secondary was horrible, and they're starting from scratch now. So I don't think defensively, I don't think they can keep up. They might outshoot. I don't know how to put it. Get into a shootout and beat somebody, like say Kansas City. They might be able to beat Kansas City's defense, but their defense isn't going to stop Kansas City's offense. And same thing goes for Buffalo. I think Buffalo is the most well-built team in the NFL other than Tampa Bay. Like, so if I had to rank AFC teams right now based off of roster, because no one knows how good people are going to play this year. It's kind of stupid to do it this way, but I think it's Kansas City, Buffalo, New England, Cleveland, I'd probably put ahead of Tennessee. Maybe Pittsburgh if they can figure things out on the offensive line. And then I think Tennessee is more in a Pittsburgh realm than a Buffalo, Kansas City realm.
Do you put the Colts above them, or do you still think Tennessee is probably going to win the South?
I think that's tough. See, I think the Colts defense is very good. Like,
yeah,
it's going to be a matchup of strengths and weaknesses. The Colts defense versus the Titans offense is going to be a great matchup, but the Colts offense versus the Titans defense, it's a wash. Like, I think it's a wash both ways. So I think they'll have very similar records. What they're probably going to end up doing is killing each other. They're going to have very similar records, and whoever doesn't win the division isn't going to make the playoffs, just because that's how strong the AFC East is at the top and the AFC North is at the top.
I also just got to look quickly at the standings. Not standings. I just want to look at the schedule quickly just to see it when if they play Week 18, because I know, like, last year it was, I believe – it was Tennessee, Houston, and it was Jacksonville, Indy. And I'm just like, we don't need that. We need, like, the good teams playing each other Week 18. Because I know we play – the one that scares me is we play Miami Week 18. I'm like, fuck, that just spells loss. No, unfortunately, it's Tennessee versus Tennessee at Houston and the Colts of the Jags. So, NFL, you pooch the bet on that one. My big thing with the Colts, I was going to say, my big thing with the Colts too is how their receivers can progress and how Wentz looks. Like,
yeah, they're.
Sorry. With a little miscommunication, folks. Remember, first episode back in almost a month, or in over a month. Like, if Michael Pittman can have a big leaping year, Zach Pascal, I think, is a very underrated wide receiver in the NFL. Here's a little tidbit for them. Paris Campbell's played 9 games in the last 2 years. If he can stay healthy, and then T.Y. Hilton, I don't expect them to get a lot of. I think it's kind of like what Deshaun Jackson's going to be for the L.A. Rams. So
that's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. Like, if Paris Campbell can come in and become wide receiver number 2 behind Pittman, and Pascal can keep that number 3 role. Like, T.Y. Hilton, I guess you could say, is their number 1 wide receiver. But at this point in his career, he'll be out there, but he's not going to produce a ton. So you need Pittman to step up and be 1. You need Campbell to step up and be 2. And then Pascal and Hilton can kind of take over that 3 and 4 role. If that can happen, and if Wentz figures out what the hell went on last year, maybe in a new system it'll work, or the system that he played well in with Frank Reich, I think they could figure things out and they could kind of make a run at things. But that's a lot of ifs to kind of add up and make them a contender.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's the thing. The Colts are in that window, and they also have the solid running backs with Jonathan Taylor, who played great. With everyone had, I don't know why everyone had questions with him coming out of Wisconsin. I think it was a couple injuries. But, look, he played great, and then they lost. I'm trying to remember. Not Malik Hooker. He's the thing. Marlon Mack. Mack tore his Achilles week 1. So you have that two-headed monster at running back, and then they have a terrific offensive line with adding Eric Fisher. So
best in the league.
Oh, yeah. People are saying, like, yeah, it was Sam saying, which I tweeted today because there was the article about, hey, Drew Brees with NBC. And I'm like, I'm literally going to watch NBC for Brees dunking on Sim's bad takes. I'm literally there for, like, or the moments where Sim says something and then Brees looks at him like, Chris, shut up. But, Colts have a top 3 offensive line in the NFL.
Yeah, like, talent-wise, no one better. And their linebacking core, also stupid good. And just to touch on
Jonathan Taylor real quick.
Right. Touch on Jonathan Taylor real quick. You mentioned the problem with him coming out of Wisconsin. It was just that Wisconsin gave him the ball like 5,000 times in
11,000 yards.
Years. They just kept giving him the ball. So a lot of mileage, and I think that's a valid point with the running back, especially I don't know if he slipped into the first round or if he was a second round guy, but a top-end draft pick at running back, usually the guys who got a ton of work in high school, second round, the guys who got a ton of work in college fall off after like 3 years. Like, we're seeing it with Ezekiel Elliott. He was great early on, and he looks like a shell of himself now. Just there's a lot of mileage on those legs.
Trent Richardson. But yeah, no, you're right. Exactly. And then we'll see what happens with like a guy like Saquon Barkley this year too, one other thing I'm gonna say about the Colts right now, not for your starting receivers, but for your flex, I think Pittman and Pascal could be great options if they do pan out in their second years. Just little fantasy notes, because even though drafts don't start up for a while, I've started to go down the rabbit hole of fantasy Twitter, and I follow a few people and seeing like Pat getting more involved in it. You start to see, hey, look, pay attention to this shit in the summer, so when you come to the draft time, you're prepared.
Yeah, I hate fantasy football, but I'll let you plug that. I won my league last year, but everybody forgot like that it was a league, so it was kind of a fake win.
You know what, like the same thing here, like a lot of the leagues I was in last year were like no cash value or anything, just like I'd be getting messages, hey, in case the season doesn't end or it ends in like October, I'm like, the NFL is not, the NFL literally will not stop for COVID. They're the only league in sports not to have been affected by this pandemic. Not like they were affected, but not affected greatly.
The NFL doesn't care about its players enough to stop.
Yeah.
They do not care about their players. So they'll push them through. We saw it firsthand, you know, if you follow the Patriots. They put them on a plane the day of a game, made them get off the plane, play a football game. Oh, and by the way, a guy with COVID was on one of those planes. So they had a you don't have COVID plane, and you might have COVID, but you still have to play today plane. That's how much the NFL cares about their players.
And they held Patrick Mahomes to, I think, no touchdowns in the first half of that game. A game that I still say
the whole game.
Yeah, the thing that I still say is if Cam was healthy, there is a very good chance we win. I get laughed after saying that. I still think it. This year, though, we'll see.
Absolutely would have won that game if Brian Hoyer didn't forget how clocks work, at the end of the first half, they would have won that game. They would have went up, and in the second half, they would have, I think they would have been up 6 points going into the second half, and they end up losing by three, I think, something like that.
No, it was 16 because I think someone threw a pick six. I think it was Hoyer threw a pick six. Stidham threw a pick six. It like bounced off Jules' arms and then right into Tyrann Mathieu, and then Tyrann Mathieu just see you to the house.
Yeah, they ended up blowing him out. You're right.
Yeah. But you, also one so we're here for hot takes. I got one for you right now. The AFC is already, I know, because like, you know, they say with some hockey conferences, the West is harder than the East. Football, it's the AFC is going to be the harder conference to make the playoffs in. The NFC,
absolutely,
it's not even close.
Well, you like the best. I'm trying to think. The NFC, think ahead. you've got one really good team,
yep.
The Bucks, and then you've got a couple teams who no one knows if they're going to be good or not, like Seattle, the Rams.
New Orleans,
I don't think they'll be good, but like, I guess it's a question for some people. Dallas, like, no one knows. They could be really good or they could suck. It's
Minnesota.
Minnesota, Green Bay, who knows if Aaron Rodgers is going to show up. Like,
yeah.
No one knows if any of those teams are going to be good. Some of them will be, and then I think the way it's going to work out is there's four or five of those teams. Half of them are going to be good, half of them are going to suck. It's kind of, just because that's the way the NFL schedule works out. So those teams who you had no idea if they're going to be good, their records are going to be much better than the roster, you know, would show.
Yeah, exactly. Like when I say New Orleans, like I'm just not going to count them out because like how last year people still had faith in us because of Bill Belichick, because of Sean Payton. I'm going to do that. The only thing I'm going to say is right now with the Saints, isn't it going to be great? Because we, for some reason, we kick off at 4:25 September 12th. Browns Chiefs, which I'm a little irked at because I would have loved to have seen that game. But in the Fox Prime window, you're probably going to have at the moment Taysom Hill taking on Jordan Love at 4:25 p.m. So if you're watching Fox, have fun with it.
Yeah, that's tough. I am interested to see Jordan Love. He's going to play eventually. I don't know if it's going to be this year, but I'm interested to see him play. I think he's got bust like written on his forehead in permanent Sharpie. Yeah, like I never saw it. I still don't see it. I don't know what the whole deal, like, why would you draft him if you're the Packers? It makes no sense. If I was Aaron Rodgers, I would never step foot in Green Bay again. That's a ridiculous mismanagement of your assets.
So apparently they wanted Justin Jefferson, but then Minnesota got him. But then they wanted Brandon Ayuk, but then San Francisco jumped them. So apparently they panicked when I'm just like, okay, you could have had Pittman, you could have had Claypool. Like, you could have waited and drafted Tyler Johnson.
That's why you're allowed to trade back. If you don't want anybody, trade back. Like, you don't panic pick a quarterback.
No, you panic pick, like, when you're me in fantasy football and you're in the queue and someone takes a player, two players before you, and you take the next best available one. He ends up having a shit year. That's when you panic pick. You do not panic pick if you're Brian Gutekunst and Mark Murphy, which right now, like, look. Florio says this all the time. You know what Rodgers could do this year? I know you're younger than me, but have you seen The Longest Yard with Adam Sandler?
Yes, of course.
Remember at the end of the movie how Sandler went to go get the ball and basically shoved it in the warden's chest?
Yeah.
Rodgers could do that. Come back, lead Green Bay to a Super Bowl, win it, go grab the football, basically say, up yours, put this in your trophy case, deuces. It's a possibility. I'm just saying
that group of people, like Rodgers, Gutekunst, Mark Murphy, LaFleur, the most unlikable, like, I don't want any of them to succeed. They're all so stupid and so petty, and they're acting like children. Like, Rodgers is acting like a 12-year-old. Gutekunst is a dumbass. Murphy's very stupid, but like saying that he's a complicated guy. LaFleur, I think. Yeah, LaFleur, like, I don't know if he knows what's going on. I think they're just like, go come up with the offensive plays and leave us alone. Like, I can't root for any of them just because they're so unlikable as people. Like, they're – so I hope Rodgers, like, retires and they fire the – no, I don't hope people lose their jobs, but, like, unlikable group of guys.
Oh, yeah, because if Aaron Rodgers either retires, sits out for the year, or, like, does what – like, he could easily sit out for this year, go host Jeopardy, and then next year, hey, look, I'm coming back. trade me to this place and get, because like what a lot of people got pissed off at Gronk because we got fuck all in return. So hey, Rodgers could do that.
Sixth round pick.
Yep, a sixth round pick. So Aaron Rodgers could do that because also, I think for him to come out and say this on the night of the draft was just him. It was a petty move. It was like, oh hey, look, you did this bad thing to me. I'm going to do this to you. A few hours before you have to make a pick, I'm going to come out and basically set the world on fire on draft night at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. They're just all petulant children the way they're acting. Yeah. And we were talking about this before we got on air. You were saying like, that's all that there is in the news really NFL wise. Yep. Like that's tough for the NFL because I don't think anybody wants to pay attention to this because it's so frustrating to watch.
Circus sideshow.
Yeah. It's like everybody's hate watching it because they have nothing else and they want to be mad at these people. So they'll watch it, but not for the right reasons.
It's like what I told you. Like, I'm at work every day. I listen to Pro Football Talk because I like to be dialed in and know as much stuff. So when I come on here, I'm not just spewing bullshit, even though it seems like a lot of the guys who do that get paid millions of dollars. Any big network, pay me. You just gave the NFL a lot of money. But I feel like I told you, Florio said in an email, someone's like, oh, can you still, I had to like stop listening because you talk about Aaron Rodgers. And he's like, that's all we got. Like it's the middle of June. It's the time of year where if your team's in the news, it's not a good thing. Like, and the more I see this too, I remember last year when everyone was saying like the whole, oh, was it Belichick? Was it Brady? It's like, why does it always have to be who's on the wrong side? This one, it's a little more obvious, but I just don't like how everything in this world has to be a goddamn competition, you know?
Yeah. I view all of these things the same way. Who cares? Like, why does somebody have to be blamed? Or be in the wrong, like it happened, process it and get over it. That's how I view these things. Just like it happened. They drafted a quarterback and you wanted them to draft a receiver. And then the head coach made a stupid decision at the end of the NFC Championship game. Guess what? You signed a contract 3 years ago for a lot of money. Show up to work. Like stop acting like a baby because they didn't do things the way you wanted them to do it. And on the other side, this guy is the only reason your franchise has been relevant the past 10 years. Do what he wants. If he tells you to do something, do it blindly and don't say a word about it. So both sides are in the wrong. So I'm not going to root for either side. So I'm just going to ignore it until it's over.
You know what? At the same point, I'm going to do it too. It's just, you know what? Sometimes it's you try to like cancel the noise, but the noise is too loud. It's like with Tom, how, like you said earlier, look, he didn't show up for OTAs. Like, look, in the later years of his contract, he, like, I'm going to say this too, for anyone doubting the Patriots, read the book by Jeff Benedict. With him, he went to them and said, hey, I want to spend more time with my family. So they said, okay, Tom, you don't have to go to OTAs. You can be in Europe with Giselle. You can go here with her and the kids. Like you can go to the Met Ball. You do whatever the hell you want. Like with Rodgers, it was just more like, it's just self-petty. And even too, like you said, it was the dumb play. Like Tampa Bay was not the better team in the NFC Championship game. It's just Green Bay did not capitalize on their chances to win when it mattered most. And then also too, it didn't hurt that the Tampa secondary figured out, oh, hey, he's only going to Adams. So let's just cover Adams at all times. And you know what? Props to Todd Bowles. It worked.
Also, Tom Brady realized that Kevin King stinks and just attacked him for two quarters straight.
Yeah, when Scotty Miller puts you in a body bag, it's not a good day. I also said, too, the second he signed there, everyone's like, yo, he's got Evans. He's got Godwin. I'm like, yo, he's got Scotty Miller. Scotty Miller is exactly the guy he likes to throw to.
A little white guy. Who wouldn't want to throw to that guy?
Justin Watson's going to be a Pro Bowler either this year or next year.
Love that take.
Yeah. The one thing I'm going to say, too, about the Bucs, that there's a couple things that I don't like about it. One is the whole I don't know if you heard this, but Bruce Arians apparently said that Blaine Gabbert's the most underrated player in the NFL right now. I'm like, Bruce, I respect you. You're a good coach. Stop it. No. Kyle Trask is the future of that team whenever Brady retires. Like, they're basically doing what Tom wanted to have done all along. Not all along, but what Tom kind of wanted in Green Bay with they just gave him the keys to the car. So that's just one thing I got to say. As soon as I heard that Blaine Gabbert take, I'm like, Bruce, like, no one's buying your bullshit.
They did exactly what the Patriots did as well. The Patriots ended up cutting. Like, who knows if the Bucs are going to cut Blaine Gabbert or if they're going to keep a third quarterback. But this is what the Patriots did. They drafted Jimmy G in the second round.
Yep.
The Bucs drafted Kyle Trask in the second round. Brian Hoyer was there. That was Brady's guy, the guy who did all the hard work during the week for him. Like, you know, setting up the scout team and stuff like that. He did all that stuff. That's who Blaine Gabbert is. The Patriots ended up cutting Hoyer before the season, but like who knows if we're going to see that happen in Tampa Bay, but they're following a formula that worked. And I think that's one of the things that you don't see in the NFL nowadays is everybody tries to figure out their own way of doing things. And sometimes it works. Like Sean McVay brought the Rams to a Super Bowl when that team probably wasn't good enough to go to a Super Bowl because they were doing all this new inventive stuff and they outsmarted everybody along the way, but it caught up to them. Like when you try to work that way, it catches up to you. When you follow the formula that works time in and time out, like you're going to be successful. It's not rocket science. It really isn't. So I think that's what Tampa Bay is doing. They're kind of just like, hey, remember that thing that you did 7 years ago? We're going to do that, and then we're going to win a Super Bowl. And Brady was like, all right, sick.
Yeah. Like, and also the other thing I'll say, too, with the Rams thing is also getting not a flag towards the end of the game that would have effectively had the Saints go to the Super Bowl that year.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, because with the Rams, like, who knows? And I feel like now, like, them literally trading away their future just for Matthew Stafford, like, part of me wants to see it's good. And also, I can't wait for all these casual people to come up and be like, hey, do you know this Matt Stafford guy was good? I'm like, yeah, he was just in a shitty organization for the last, like, what, 11, 12 seasons?
11.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where it's just like, yeah, he's going to be good. It's just my only thing with the Bucs, and I know people brought this up to me, like, non-Pats fans, is – whenever, like, look at the seasons when after we won a Super Bowl and then we got comfortable and then we never really found it. So, like, I wouldn't be shocked if the Bucs are, like, they're going to be a 14-3 team this year, I think. They'll run through it. But one of those three losses, I have a feeling, is going to come against a bad team. I think they'll slip somewhere along the way.
Yeah, probably early on, too, just like New England always did. Like, a stupid decision in a Saints game or something like that. Well, they'll drop that, you know? It happened last year, the early Saints game. They should have won that game. And
what, the game where they got absolutely walked, or?
Yeah, well, did they end up beating the Saints?
No, they beat them in the playoffs, no. But week one, Brady had two
picks. They lost both regular season games. Week one was that game where they played like dog shit, and they shouldn't have. They were the better team.
And then week 8 or 9, I'm trying to remember what it was, they just got their ass kicked. There's no way, you can't sugarcoat it. That was a straight ass kicking. But even last year, too, I have a love-hate relationship with him, like, doing the whole, oh, yeah, hey, I thought it was third down. No, Tom, we're only laughing at that now because you guys won. If they didn't win the Super Bowl, you would not hear that being talked out of Tom's mouth. I guarantee you that the Bears blunder on Thursday Night Football. Even, too, like, they had other games like the I remember it last year. It was against the Giants on Monday Night Football. I was, like, I saw the spread. It was 11, and I'm like, the Giants are going to cover that tonight. What did the Giants do? They covered it, and I did not bet like a moron that I am. Because that's my life.
It's tough.
It's tough, but you know what? The only other way I could see them making a blunder is maybe October 4th in a stadium named after a shaving razor company. I don't know.
Who knows? You know, maybe Bruce Arians tries to get too cute or something. Who knows?
One thing I honestly think about that game is the whole week it's going to be, oh, is Belichick going to – are they going to shake his hand? I'm like, it's going to be said every week. Oh, is there going to be – they're going to ask him, oh, do you have any hard feelings or remorse? And they're all going to see him gets another game. But deep down, like, the three of them know what they created, Tom, Bill, and Rob in his new Bentley, I should say.
At this point, it's been a year and a half. Like, or at the time of the game, it will have been a year and a half since Brady left. They don't care anymore. They're all over it. Like,
yeah,
I don't think any three of those guys really, like, I think they hold on to the good memories and they kind of were just like, listen, we need to get away from the bad stuff and we're done with it. And like a week later, they were all fine. They're going to freaking hug each other. And they're going to do like a three-way hug and kiss in the middle of the field. Everybody's going to be like, oh, wow, I can't believe it. I didn't expect them to do that. Like, they're going to show a video. Brady's going to cry. Like, it's going to be a whole shindig.
I may cry.
Yeah. Griff's going to cry. It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah. Like, I'm already thinking about that week, and I'm like, because you know the Monday of that happening, it's going to be right away. Like, even to – like, I'll always watch Sunday Night Football if I can. And I know I'm going to be watching Sunday Night Football, and they're going to do the advertisement of, like, the homecoming and everything, and I'm going to be like, I'm not ready for it yet. No, I've been preparing for this because I knew 21, he's coming back, but I'm not ready for it. The other question I was going to ask you is, are you going to shell your wallet out? Or are you going to kick your wallet's ass by going to that game? Or
I do not know. So a little personal news. I know no one cares, but I just signed a lease for an apartment.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks. A little bit less throwing away money for me nowadays. So we'll see. I think the plan is for me, I'm going to try to finagle my way in as a journalist. We'll see if it works out. I doubt it will, but it's always worth a shot. If not, I'll probably buy a ticket. I think two tickets nowadays is going to run you like 4 G's. So lots of saving to do until October, but we'll see. I would bet it's more probable than not that I'll be there.
I'm going to try my best to make it down there. Look, I think the Canadian border should be opening soon. I'm hoping to get to a game either this year or next year. Just, it all depends on like what goes on in the world. Cause like, I know if I go this year, it's going to be very last minute, but I also look at the Saints game week 3 and I'm like, for a ticket I'd spend 2 G's on, I could spend 500 on and go to a game where I'm like,
you could spend like $1.50 on it and get the same seats. So,
oh, I'm planning on sitting in the lower bowl. If I go, I'll pay the money for it. Because for me, it's a once in a lifetime trip, which I would like to make more than that. But for the first time I go, I want to try to have like the best seats possible. That's all.
Yeah, for sure. I get that. If you do come down, you got to let us know because I'm pretty sure Pat's at every game. And Spags, you know, sprinkles a few in there. So we'll make a trip out of it if you do come out down. So you got 100%.
Even if he's he may be in the press box too. So we'll wait and see.
Verified guy Spags, all cool and better than us. He'll probably be on the field before the game. Who knows?
Not a big deal. Just him and like next to like, you know, you're gonna see it on the side. You're gonna have him sandwiched between Doug Kyed from Nesson and then Jeff Howe from The Athletic, and then off in the corner you see Levin Reed and Mike Priest.
Yeah, up in like the third deck.
Yeah,
doing dances before the game.
Yeah, exactly. And then Steve Burton over in the CBS Foreign Club just like laughing his ass off. A couple other things too, just to touch on before we go. I know it's June, but I wanted to do this because I saw it. It was a TikTok and it had to do with goalies, but I wanted to change it to quarterbacks. And one thing I wanted to ask you is if you had to pick a dark horse MVP candidate for we'll just say quarterback because obviously it's the position that usually gets it. Where would you lean towards?
Dark horse MVP. See, the first thing that comes to mind is Josh Allen, but I don't think he's a dark horse anymore.
I wouldn't say so.
Yeah, I think he's like probably up towards the top of the league. I'll say Kyler Murray. I think for that might not even be dark horse either, but the way I view it is there are three guys at the top of the league every year that are, you know, in it. Like it varies every year. But Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, and Deshaun Watson, if he plays, who knows? Those three are going to be in the race. And then you've got guys like Brady who can always make a run at it. Rodgers won it last year. Josh Allen. So just off that alone, that's six guys who could possibly win it. I think Murray is well far away from those guys in terms of the chances of winning it. And with the additions that they made on offense and defense specifically, I think they're going to win a lot more games this year than they won last year. And if he can put up similar numbers and kind of stay the course that he had the first half of last year, I think he could probably win it.
I'll also say this too. If they do not make the playoffs, Cliff Kingsbury is gone.
I don't know why they hired him in the first place. Steve Keim also stinks. So I think that whole organization needs a reboot.
He's been with the organization since like, he's like Eric Spoelstra in Miami. He's been with the Cardinals.
He was like the video guy.
He was either video or scouting. It was one of the two and he just worked his way up.
Yeah, Eric Spoelstra he literally cut video for the coaches and then became the head coach. Similar situation.
No, I'm just saying I know Spoelstra was in video in Miami with the Heat, excuse me, but I said Dolphins, obviously football. But with Keim, I think he was a scout or something like that. Mine, it's the same. I don't know how much of a dark horse he'll be, but mine's Justin Herbert. I think, you know what? I like the Brandon Staley hire. That's going to be one of the – that's a very underrated offensive line right now in the NFL, adding Rashawn Slater in the draft. Drafting someone my girlfriend went to high school with, actually, in Josh Palmer out of Tennessee. He's from the Toronto area, Brampton, Ontario. He's Canadian. We'll see what Austin Ekeler can do in the running back room. I think the Hunter Henry loss will be big. But, look, that team's the same thing. They need to stay healthy. Like Keenan Allen, Derwin James is the big one. Like, look, if Derwin James can stay healthy, he is a top three. He's a DPOY candidate.
Absolutely.
But I like the Brandon Staley addition. Joe Lombardi from coming over from the Saints. Because the way I look at it is with and I know everyone kind of judges what Anthony Lynn as a head coach was, but he made Herbert Offensive Rookie of the Year last year. So if he can do it, I think Staley and Lombardi can come in and do just as good of a job with Justin Herbert. So Kyler Murray's another one, but yeah. So since you went Murray, I'm going Herbert.
Yeah, I like that one. I think that's a possibility, but I just don't know how good that team's going to be. I like the talent on it. I think they can kind of make some waves a little bit, but I just don't know if they're going to be quite good enough. Also, you mentioned Brampton, Ontario. Is that where Michael Sarah's from?
Yes, it is.
That's a weird fact that I know. I don't know why I know that. I've never been to Canada, never been to Brampton, but I know that Michael Sarah's from there.
If you come up, I'll give you a tour sometime. Well, what was the other thing I was going to go on? But yeah, no, the Chargers are an interesting team. I think they're going to be either sneak into a wild card spot or just be on the outside looking in. Since I last spoke to – oh, yeah, no, wait, the 17th game is already announced. So I think they'll be in that weird 8-9 to, 10-7 window this year, the Chargers.
Yeah, and like we mentioned earlier with the kind of top-heavy AFC, there are, seven teams that should make the playoffs. So they're going to have to overtake two or three of those teams. So
exactly, or they're going to have to hope that, Pittsburgh is dog shit. They're going to have to, another team I still wonder about is the Baltimore Ravens. I know they got Lamar, but that's a big question mark to me. We'll see. And even too, I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs or be good, but you never know if Denver actually goes with the right quarterback. And I want to say Vegas, but at the same time too, I just look at it and I'm like, that's a car crash waiting to happen.
The decisions that they've made in the draft alone, they shouldn't be allowed to make the playoffs. I don't care if they go undefeated. They shouldn't be allowed just because they've been that stupid in the past couple of years. So I don't see them making the playoffs happening anytime soon.
I don't think Mike Mayock, because I honestly think this year they're going to miss and Mike Mayock's going to be the one thrown under the bus because John Gruden's Teflon like Steve Keim in Arizona. And then Mike Mayock is going to end up for the NFL Network and everyone's going to go, you don't know how to judge talent. The only great thing you know how to do is point out what a bubble butt is. Which I'll also say this today. I showed my girlfriend and my sister that clip. They couldn't believe it when I told them. I'm like, yeah, he said it. And then who was the lineman? I think it was Greg Robinson out of Auburn.
Yeah,
that's who it was. And it was like, that guy has got a bubble butt. And they were just crying laughing the entire time.
Mike Mayock, I cracked the code on his draft strategy. He just drafts the players from the best schools.
Yep.
Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. If they went there, he'll draft them. Doesn't matter how good they are. We saw it was prime example this year, 17th overall pick. He took a guy in Leatherwood who probably should have went in the third round. He took him in the 17th pick.
He had literally flipped Trayvon Moehrig and Alex Leatherwood, his draft would have looked so much better. That's all he had to do. If he took Moehrig at 17, and then even I think it was 41 or 43 where he had where Moehrig went. I know, you said third round, but even if Leatherwood goes in the second, it's such a better draft. And even too, you're hearing stuff like, oh, Tom Cable loves him. It's like, who gives a shit what Tom Cable thinks? You're the GM. You make the decisions. I feel like it's has to be a team effort in Vegas. So we'll see what happens. But if that team's not good, you're going to see a Chargers situation, I think, where you get more away fans, especially considering that team has not played in front of fans yet in Sin City. It could be a Golden Knights situation, and it very well may not be.
I think it's probably going to be more of the latter, where whoever they're playing is going to have 80% of the fans in the stadium, and then they're going to have
the Eagles go there this year. That stadium is going to be green whenever the Eagles go there.
And then, I don't think people in Vegas care about the teams. It's transplants. It's people who travel. So
yeah,
if whoever is able to make the drive down from Oakland will be there every week, but you play the Rams from LA, I don't know if that's probably a bad example. If you play Seattle, let's say, that stadium is going to be 90% Seattle fans because they're all crazy anyways and they travel well. When it's not that far compared to, you know, wherever else they may be going, like, they're going to take over that stadium.
New England goes there. Pittsburgh goes there. Green Bay goes there. I know we were talking about Green Bay and you don't want anything good to happen to them, but those are just some markets where, you know what, the fan base travels well. Like, yep. Even too, it's like LA in the sense because there's more Raider fans in Southern California than there are Rams and Chargers fans.
Absolutely.
So that's the other thing too, like where you have, that's why I'm saying like, it has to be like a Golden Knight situation where you find success, or no pun intended, gold, you find a gold mine in order to be successful. Cause we see what the Golden Knights, that winning culture has created. They've built a fan base within the Las Vegas area. Meanwhile, the Raiders, like you said, people aren't going to care if the team is 7-10 or 8-9, why are they going to go and support them? Especially too, when the stadium tickets, I think, are a lot of money, and they may go for the club to get drunk, but that's about it. Excuse me.
Absolutely. Sorry.
So it's just one of those things. Also, to one other Chargers note, another pick I liked for them was taking Asante Samuel Jr. at 40. That was another pick. So that's just something else I wanted to throw in there. That's all.
Yeah, I didn't hate the Chargers draft at all.
No. One other thing I have, I don't know if this is a hot take, but it would not shock me if the Kansas City Chiefs didn't make the Super Bowl this year, and here's why. I know they have a great team, but if you look at Andy Reid's Super Bowl history, he's only made it to the Super Bowl in one state. That's the state of Florida, my friends. 2004 with the Jacksonville, 2019, Miami, 2020, Tampa Bay. This year's is in LA, so it's just something to look out for.
I think it's time for them to fall down to earth. Yeah. I don't think they're gonna like hit rock bottom or anything, but there's only so many years where you can be the best team in the league in the regular season. Like, there's only so many straight years. There's got to be a down year somewhere.
We say that, and then the end of January, hey, here's the AFC Championship game live from Arrowhead Stadium. We know we're going to get Jim and Tony from there. So it's just one of those things we know. Like, if it's just got to be another – I would like to see another team change up. But, like, look, it's like the run we went on from 2011 to 2018. It's like eventually, like, something had to give. The only other thing, a couple other points we'll add before we go, because I don't know how long we've been on here for, but a good amount of time. So I don't know if you've seen, obviously, the NFL has got, I think, at least 60% of the league is fully vaccinated, not fully, has at least one dose. I saw some stuff with players. You see it more and more come out. Like, you saw the dumb Montez Sweat comment I don't even want to get into. I don't like getting political on the show because I like to use it as an escape, but just some things like that really irk me. But then you have things like Brandon.
You can say it. People are stupid.
It's like, I don't know if you're a South Park fan, but they did a COVID special where Cartman literally said to some people who were like the QAnon in the cartoon, where it was like, you can believe in what you want. It's just what you believe is really stupid. So that's how I view it, especially too when, hey, your coach is immune compromised. But even you have the Buffalo Bills saying the loud thing, quiet. And then you have Josh Allen saying like, oh, I'll keep it to myself. Where I feel like with a lot of these players, look, you can say and believe in what you want. I'm not going to judge you, but don't bullshit the public. If you don't want to get it, just say it. You don't have to say, hey, I'm going to keep it to myself. Like, you can keep it to yourself if you want to, but if you're an anti-vax, just come on and say it, you know?
Yeah, I'll say this to be, you know, devil's advocate. I think a lot of Josh Allen's, you know, what he was saying, that was kind of to protect his teammate, because Cole Beasley had a weekend
Weeks
back. Where he went full, like, I don't want the vaccine, I don't need it, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So that's why he was asked a question, Josh Allen. And, you know, I think that's one of the situations where instead of throwing his teammate under the bus and making him look like an idiot, he's just going to say, no, I'll keep it to myself. And if you read the full quote, he said, I think everybody should keep it to themselves. It's a personal matter, which whether you agree with that or not, it kind of makes more sense in the context of, he was asked about Cole Beasley. He said he was going to keep it to himself and everybody else should. So instead of throwing his teammate under the bus and calling him an idiot, he was like, all right, everybody, let's just keep, you know, mind our own business.
True. With Josh Allen, who's throwing out the first pitch Thursday night at the Toronto Blue Jays game in Buffalo, New York, which when I saw that, I'm just like, someone sent that to me. And I literally just sent that gif of Elmo just going like, I don't know, like, I know we're in Buffalo temporarily right now, and I haven't been to a Jays game since August of 2019, but they're there now, so I'm not going to judge. But yeah, like the only thing with the vaccine thing is because like, you see a lot of players who just don't care to get it. If there's a team in a playoff position and you have a player who hasn't had it by December in a meaningful game and Saturday night comes around and the coach and the GM see, hey, buddy's tested positive. He can't go tomorrow. That's going to cause some like, hi, go get it, please.
Yeah. It's one of those situations, especially in America. I know you live in Canada, so you don't see everything that we see. People are just very dumb and they believe things just because they see other people believe other things and they choose to believe the opposite just because they want to kind of be contrary. And that leads to a lot of problems. So
the
big situation with the NFL is the guys who are vaccinated should be good to go until whenever they need to re-up the vaccine dose, but they're going to have to keep an eye on, but monitor the rest of the other guys. And what's going to end up pushing everybody to get the vaccine is them not wanting to be under the strict, watchful eye of the NFL. They're going to get sick of it eventually. And they're just going to be like, all right, give me the shot.
Yeah. Like
and that's a very stupid reason to want to get a vaccine just because you don't want to be bothered, but that's a reason that people will get it.
I mean, when you're making millions of dollars to do what you love to do, and hey, if it avoids you having to go to the facility before 8 a.m. every morning to get a cotton swab up your nose and tickle your brain every day and having to walk around the facility with a tracker on, you know what? Do it for the betterment of your team, because the PA came out and said this, but I still think it's going to be a thing. They came out and basically said, hey, players won't get cut because of vaccine hesitancy or because they're anti-vax. You have two mid guys, one guy's fully vaxxed, one guy's got nothing. Guess who's getting the boot? I know it's unfortunate, right, but it's going to happen. Like when a coach looks at that and has to make the decisions, you know where he's going to go because he's going to look out not only for the betterment of his team, but for the betterment of public safety.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's just the little things to point out. And also too, because like I said, folks, it's June 15th and we don't got a whole lot to talk about.
Yeah, it's a struggle. Like they talk about the dog days of summer when basketball is almost over. Hockey's almost over. All we're going to have left is baseball for like 3 months. And, for a full month, we're not going to have any football either because training camp doesn't start till July 29th. So this is the worst month of the year by far. My birthday's in a week and I still hate June. I hate June and July.
I know my girlfriend's birthday is actually in a week today. So, and I have to do the same thing. So, I'll do this to you. Happy early birthday, my friend. 22.
22. Yep. I'm an old man. 20.
Making me feel old. I'll be 28 this coming December. But no, like you said, it's the dog days. Cause I always say this, the difference between like this sport, like with football compared to like hockey, basketball, and even baseball, with hockey and basketball, you have the season end, then you have the draft immediately. You have free agency like a few days afterwards. This year, it's going to be interesting with the expansion draft. And then usually everyone goes quiet for about 7-8 weeks. Where you hear nothing, you may hear a little bit of trades here and there or like some signings. Same thing with basketball. Football is a train that goes 365. The train's going a little slow right now, but in 6 weeks, it's going to chug, 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 chug along. It's my horrible train impression. But like I said, folks, first episode back, I got to get in the groove of things. But like we say too, I always say this after the day after the Super Bowl. Next season will be here before we know it. Before we know it, it's going to be September 9th, and I'm watching the Buccaneers play the Cowboys on Thursday Night Football. So, you know what? It'll be here before we know it, and that's when we can start freaking out for real.
Yeah, it sneaks up on you. It gets you, where you least expect it. All of a sudden, it's time to start preparing for football season. So, I'm excited. I think this last, 4 weeks until training camp is going to fly by, and then that's when the fun starts for me anyway, so. I'm really excited to get things going.
Exactly, because you know what? It's like we said, now's the downtime. But before we know it, training camp will be here, preseason, and then that's when it starts getting into it because, hey, you get fantasy leagues going, you get survival leagues if that's your thing. One thing I want to announce quickly for this podcast, I'm going to start doing – I do weekly predictions for games. I'm going to start throwing out what games I like to help you guys win some money betting-wise. As a guy who's won $0 betting, I'm going to try and help you and myself win some money every week. So – we'll see what goes there. Because I say this too. The gambling has been the biggest boogeyman in the NFL for years. They've hated it, but they're finally acknowledging it. When you pay billions to partner with like DraftKings and FanDuel, they're finally embracing that, look, hey, we can make a shitload of money off of degenerates. Let's go have some fun. I know it sounds really fucked up, but that's the truth.
It's almost like common sense prevailed. Shocking in terms of, you know, the NFL, but finally somebody was like, oh, wow, we can make money by doing nothing? Amazing.
Yeah, the Superdome is going to be named after Caesars this year, and I just say this, you're going to have betting kiosks in stadiums one day. 100% you will.
Absolutely.
Which may lead to some stupid stuff, but we'll cross that bridge if we ever get there. But anyway, folks, I think it's going to wrap it up for today. Do you have anything else you want to add on to the stuff we recorded today?
That's it. We are, we're starting back up with the podcast that I'm now a co-host on, the Pats Nation Pod. You can, you know, go on Twitter at Pats Nation Pod. Give us a follow. All three of our Twitter links and everything are in the bio. You can follow all of us. Kind of similar to this show. So if you like this show, you can go follow. Lots of Patriots talk. We're going to have some new segments and stuff like that coming up this year. And then we have some fun announcements coming up as well. Some really cool stuff, some video stuff, some written stuff, not just all podcasts. So go check that out. Follow that Twitter page. And then with everything else, you'll be able to see all of our announcements and stuff like that. And then follow me on Twitter. You can find it in the bio there. I write sometimes. I podcast. I tweet my thoughts. It's me.
He's a man of all trades, guys. Follow Keegan. Follow the whole Pats Nation Pod crew. Like, for Patriots podcasting, it's my go-to. It should be yours, too. But anyway, and like I said, too, check out Keegan's interview with Joe Cardona, long snapper from the Patriots. I appreciate you having him answer my question.
Got you. I was anyway, getting rushed out, too. They were like, all right, one question. And I was like, all right, I'll do Griff's.
Appreciate that. Appreciate you, man. But anyway, guys, that's going to do it today. Episode 92 in the books. My goal right now, I'm saying this on air, is to hit 100 before kickoff on September 9th. I'm going to be at 100 before kickoff. As for when I upload, I'll be back Thursday night with my good buddy Danny. We're going to get a little Jets talk. He's a Jets fan, so I know it's weird, but I'm trying to do that now. I know it's gross, but you know what? I cater to all fan bases here. I'm going to try to get in as many teams from different fans to kind of get their perspective on where their franchises are at. And before we know it, guys, the season will be here. So if you're watching this on YouTube, one love. Wow. Have a good one, guys.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.